Another week of the Paranormal Patriot coming right at you now. Welcome to the Paranormal Patriot. Thank you for joining me. As always, I am your host wearing the tinfoil hat. My name is Tom Velasquez. Again, thank you for joining me. Unfortunately, we will be without Andrew this weekend. It is his spring break. He's been very, very busy doing a lot of things. And to be honest, he didn't have time to prep. I didn't spend a lot of time prepping with him due to him having spring break, so I gave him the week off. No big deal. We didn't go anywhere for spring break. We went last year, and truth be told, with the medical bills coming at us left and right, money's a little tight, so we decided to stay home in the unfortunate winter wonderland that is Michigan. We are in the first week of April, and it just continues to snow. Every day somewhere south seems so much better. So you may be getting the Paranormal Patriot from somewhere south pretty darn soon because I'm losing all interest in this cold weather. But I do digress. Great show this week. It covers two of my favorite topics. The supernatural in World War II. I love World War II, not because of the war effort. You know, I do just love hearing the stories. But because of the greatest generation of Americans to ever live, you can't look at that generation and say they're not. What they did, what they sacrificed, was beyond anything that we could ever do right now. And this is no disrespect to the military men and women that we have now. They are doing an amazing job. But let's look at our generation now and compare it to the generation of World War II. Can you see the number of people in our generation, this generation that's growing up, that's on TV, spouting off of the march of our lives, can you see them going to war against a fascist dictator hell-bent on world domination? No. Hell, they don't even love this country. They wouldn't go fight for it. So to do what those men and women did in the 40s, is just amazing what they endured. And it is only fitting that when they came back, they prospered. They did phenomenal. They had houses built for them. It was just a great time to be an American in the late 40s and then the 50s. My mom and dad grew up then. I would have loved to have grown up then just to see what it was like. So we're going to have a topic on the supernatural and World War II. We're going to have a story that combines those two and gives us an account of one of the most baffling events of World War II. But again, before I begin the show, I want to go over last week's show. Last week's show did very well. It did not break the records that the other previous shows did. I don't know if it had to do with the fact that while we were talking about Nibiru, I spent more time bantering back and forth with Andrew, or as he told me to call him, the Cosmic Dreamer. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. It still did very well. Again, I look at the numbers we're pulling now compared to the numbers we were pulling before the Paranormal Patriot went on hiatus, and we are better than those numbers before. So not only do I have the original audience, but I'm gaining audience, and that's great. And that's because of you guys. So continue to share, continue to talk about the show. But just a couple things to go over on the last show. I had a couple polls. I'm not going to give the results of the first poll. The first poll was, hey, should Andrew change his name to Cosmic Dreamer? I'll hold off on that. I'm going to extend that another week. I'm going to repost it, and I want to get more feedback from it. The Nibiru poll, again, I went Facebook, Minds, and a lot of people sent me their responses via email. Not as many as before. I think I had 63, but the majority, 90% said Nibiru doesn't exist. I'm going that route. I still get feeds on Facebook saying, Nibiru is here, Nibiru is here. Things are happening. I just don't see it. Andrew is a believer that Nibiru is here. It may not be that planet, but he is convinced we are a binary system. And that may be what it is. It may be that brown dwarf that we were talking about. So those are the results of the poll that I posted. Andy from Texas, you made a very interesting and very, very good comment. I saved it and was going to talk about it on the show. For some reason, the comment's gone. I don't understand. But for my listeners, Andy from Texas, longtime listener, great friend. He made a comment. Could it be that Nibiru is in a different, and again, if I get this wrong, I apologize, I'm going off of memory, but it's basically in a different spectrum. It's not seen unless it's, you can't see it with the naked eye, you can only see it in the infrared. That is something I've never thought of before, but that's kind of plausible. So chalk that one up to, hey, another great comment from one of my listeners. Send me your comments. Get them posted on this show. If it's a good comment, I will give you your props. Andy, great comment. And then lastly, I can't believe I forgot to do this, but with everything going on, middle of the week, I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't post a picture. So I finally posted the picture of the alleged Batman of Chicago that I had. And everybody, to a T, said, that's a bird. And I understand it's a bird. You know, a lot of people were saying, Tom, that's a bird. What are you thinking? So many emails I got. What are you, crazy, Tom? Come on. That's a bird. I get that's a bird. I am posting the picture that somebody sent me that says, Tom, look, it's the Batman. It's a bird. I get it. What type of bird it is, I've had an eagle, I've had an owl, I've had a condor, whatever, it's a bird. It's not the Batman of Chicago. Truth be told, the Batman of Chicago, it's kind of dying down. So, yes, I know it was a bird. Thank you to everybody for responding to the post via Facebook, via email. I know it was a bird. It is a bird. Somebody either was messing with me or is really, really gullible and looking at this thing going, look, it's a Batman. It's not. It was a bird. I'm not going to name the person that sent it to me because I don't want to make him look or embarrass him in any way, shape, or form. But, buddy, it was a bird. So when we come back, I will talk about two of my favorite topics, the supernatural and World War II. And we'll get into one of the bigger mysteries of World War II as to what exactly happened. So sit back, relax, open that mind of yours, because we're going to have to open it up pretty big to get to the bottom of this mystery. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez, and I will be right back. Join me on September 21st and 22nd, 2018, for an Out of This World event. The Michigan UFO Contact. Spend the day listening and learning from all of the special guest speakers who will be lecturing about UFOs, sightings, experiences, the contact phenomenon, and more. Be sure to check out their amazing vendor rooms for unique gifts, creative works, psychic readings, and much more to list here. All of this will be taking place at the beautiful Lakeside Resort and Conference Center in Houghton Lake, Michigan. Overlooking the largest inland lake in Michigan, not only can you enjoy the UFO convention, but you can enjoy nature. This resort is full of windows, including a walkout balcony. This will be an educational and refreshing event. Lecturers include John Tenney, Andrea Perrin, Bill Konkoleski, Erica Luke, Steve Ward, and Nick Redford. For more information on the resort, go to www.lakesideresortmichigan.com. Again, September 21st and 22nd, 2018, join me and be at the Michigan UFO Contact. Remember, everybody, if you love the bumper music, the music before and after every advertisement, you need to go to Jamendo.com. Jamendo.com is your source for unsigned independent artists that are ready to break through. Great music in whatever genre you enjoy can be yours free of charge. Just sign up, download it, and enjoy the artist's music. Go to Jamendo.com and get the music you like to hear. Alrighty, we are back. Let's get into the show. Now, a lot of my listeners were not alive back when World War II was being fought. I myself was not alive. My parents were not alive. So we'd have to go back to most people's grandfathers or maybe parents. But a lot of people don't know that on February 23rd, the mainland of the United States came under direct attack for the first time in the war. Most people do not realize that a Japanese submarine briefly surfaced and then lobbed about 13 shells onto the oil refinery at Elwood in Santa Barbara, California, on the California coast. Now, little damage was done as none of these shells hit any vital part of the installation. But this ramped up the inevitability that the U.S. mainland was going to be attacked. Now, keep in mind, in 1942, the U.S. had just recently entered the fray of World War II. December 7th, 1941, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. On December 8th, 1941, we officially declared war on Japan and Germany. So we were fairly new into this war. Before then, we were neutral. We didn't want any part of it. Well, we were thrown into it. So the nation as a whole was on high alert. And they were constantly monitoring the skies and monitoring the seas on both coasts of the United States. Now, during the night of February 24th and early morning hours of February 25th of 1942, unidentified objects caused a succession of alerts in Southern California. On the 24th, a warning issued by Naval Intelligence indicated that an attack could be expected within the next 10 hours. Now, that evening, a large number of flares and blinking lights were reported from the vicinity of defense plants along the coast. An alert called at 7:18 p.m. Pacific Time was lifted at 2:23, and the tension temporarily seemed to relax. But then, early in the morning on February 25th, renewed activity began. Radars picked up an unidentified target 120 miles west of Los Angeles. Anti-aircraft batteries were alerted at 2:15, and were put on green alert, which means ready to fire, a few minutes later. The AAF kept its pursuit planes on the ground, preferring to await indications of the scale and direction of any attack before committing its limited fighting force. Radars then tracked the approaching target to within a few miles of the coast, and at 2:21, the regional controller ordered a blackout. Therefore, the information center was flooded with reports of enemy planes, and I say that with parentheses around them, enemy planes, even though the mysterious object tracked in from the sea seemed to have vanished. At 2:43, planes were reported near Long Beach, and a few minutes later, a Coast Artillery colonel spotted about 25 planes at 12,000 feet over Los Angeles. At 3:06 in the morning, a balloon carrying a red flare was seen over Santa Monica, and four batteries of anti-aircraft artillery opened fire, whereupon the air over Los Angeles erupted like a volcano. Now, prior to this, we know exactly what happened. It is after that point that everything is convoluted, very undetermined, very unsubstantiated accounts exist at this point. Now, much of the confusion probably came from the fact that the anti-aircraft shell burst, which caused by the searchlights, were themselves mistaken for enemy planes. In any case, the next 3 hours produced some of the most imaginative reporting of the war. There were reports of swarms of planes, or sometimes balloons, of all possible sizes, numbering from one to several hundred, traveling at altitudes which range from a few thousand feet to more than 20,000 feet, and traveling at speeds which were said to have been varied from very slow to over 200 miles per hour. All of these reports were reported during this time of chaos. However, none of these mysterious aircraft dropped any bombs, and despite the fact that 1,440 rounds of anti-aircraft ammunition were directed against them, they suffered no losses. There were reports of four enemy planes that had been shot down, and one was supposed to have landed in flames at a Hollywood intersection, but that is just a rumor. There are no reports after the fact that this has happened. Residents in a 40-mile arc along the coast watched from the hills or rooftops as the play of guns and searchlights provided the first real drama of the war for citizens of the mainland. During the dawn, which ended the shooting and the chaos, also proved that the only damage which resulted to the city had been caused by A, the excitement, B, traffic accidents due to the blacked out streets, and C, shell fragments from artillery barrage. Now, I want to make this clear. After 1,440 rounds of anti-aircraft shells, among any other rounds that were being fired at the time, the only damage reported in the city of Los Angeles was essentially from the artillery shells. A couple accidents because the city was in a complete blackout. If the Japanese, the Germans, whoever it was flying an aircraft over the city of Los Angeles, A, it amazes me that it wasn't shot down after 1,440 rounds. And B, if you're going to fly over a major city, why would you not bomb it? So what I want to do now is I want to play for you the actual news broadcast that told the country about the Battle of Los Angeles.
And now for news of our own West Coast, we take you to Los Angeles and the report of Byron Palmer. Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning. The anti-aircraft guns began barking during a blackout ordered by the 4th Interceptor Command at 2:25 a.m. The unidentified object, which some sources thought might be a blimp, moved slowly down the Pacific coast from Santa Monica and disappeared south of Long Beach. Army officials declined to comment on the possibility that the object might have been a blimp. However, it required nearly 30 minutes to travel some 25 miles, far slower than an airplane. Watchers on the rooftop of the Columbia Broadcasting Building in the heart of Hollywood could plainly see the flashes of guns and searchlights sweeping the skies in a wide arc along the coastal area. Concussion of the shells could be felt in downtown Los Angeles, 15 miles away. U.S. Army planes quickly took to the dark skies, but whether they contacted the object has not been announced. Army officials say they will not comment until they receive a full report of the action. Although some watchers say they saw airplanes in the air, semi-official sources say they probably were the U.S. Army's pursuit. Several observers say they saw one or more planes spotlighted by 20 or 30 searchlights. The object moved southward, presumably over Huntington Park at the western edge of Los Angeles, and on southward to about Long Beach on the coast. By 3:30 a.m., observers said the object appeared to be over the south of Long Beach. Searchlights closely followed the object down the coast and kept it centered in their glare. Shells frequently could be seen bursting near the object, but none appeared to hit it. The shooting stopped about 3:30 a.m. The shooting brought warfare to the front door of this city of 1.25 million population for the first time since December 7th. Already, it was alert to the presence off the Southern California coast of a Japanese submarine which had pumped 25 shells into an oil field north of Santa Barbara Monday evening. Because of the presence of the submarine, a three-hour alert was ordered at dusk last night, and civilian authorities stood at their posts while the Army and Navy continued their search for the submersible. The evening alert ended at 10:23 p.m., but another was sounded at 2:22 a.m., and the blackout followed within 3 minutes. It covered Los Angeles County from Santa Monica to Pomona. At 2:27, all Southern California radio stations were ordered off the air, except those in San Diego. Approximately 20 minutes after the firing died down, the ship returned and headed westward from Long Beach toward Santa Monica. The guns went into action again, hurling round after round of shells at the object. The second barrage appeared to be closer to downtown Los Angeles, since watchers could hear the concussion of the guns more clearly and the flash of bursting shells was brighter. Then the ship disappeared for the second time over the ocean. We return you now to CBS in New York.
So this report tells you that this object was moving slower than an airplane. They believe it to be a blimp. Now, we've all seen the footage of the Hindenburg that exploded. And when it exploded, the hydrogen that was keeping it inflated just completely engulfed this Zeppelin. It amazes me, if it was a blimp, how none of these rounds would have caught this object on fire. But yet it still traversed over the skies of Los Angeles and then went to Santa Barbara and then came back. What could it have been? I will post on my Facebook page the picture, the definitive picture. For those of you who listen that are ufologists or into the UFO phenomenon, you obviously have seen this picture. I will be honest with you, I look at this picture and it's hard for me to discern what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a bunch of spotlights converge on one particular point. I have a hard time seeing the UFO that everybody sees. But I'm not saying that there was not a UFO hovering and traversing over the city of Los Angeles on February 25th, 1942. There were many odd sightings. We all know Foo Fighters. Not the band, the actual Foo Fighters that would travel and pace our fighters. Nobody knew what they were. Everybody thought they were a German secret weapon. Well, the Germans were experiencing them too. So what happened over the city of Los Angeles on the night of February 25th, 1942? Let's recap. Here are the facts. On the night of February 25th, 1942, at 3:16 in the morning, air raid sirens went off throughout Los Angeles County. A complete blackout was ordered as thousands of air raid wardens scrambled to their positions. Searchlights then scanned the skies until they were locked onto an unidentified aircraft hovering over the Los Angeles skyline. Guns were aimed at the enemy craft, and the 37th Artillery Brigade began firing 50-caliber machine guns and 12.8-pound anti-aircraft shells at the target. Now, during the chaos, a total of over 1,440 rounds, to be exact, were fired during the alert, which continued on later in sporadic bursts until 4:14 a.m., 58 minutes for this whole episode to occur. The 4th Interceptor Command was alerted, but their fighter planes did not take off. Finally, at 7:21 a.m., the all-clear was issued and the blackout was lifted. Now, this is the crazy part. In the panic of the event, 5 civilians lost their lives, 3 due to car accidents due to the blackout in the city, and 2 due to heart attacks. Also, numerous buildings and vehicles were damaged by shell fragments that fell from the sky. Nothing was damaged by the aircraft that had 50-caliber rounds and 1,440 anti-aircraft shells shot at it. So what did the Air Force say was the culprit? Well, the Office of Air Force History in 1983 reasoned that it was probably meteorological balloons that triggered the Battle of Los Angeles. Back then, every 6 hours, weather balloons were deployed from each of the dozen anti-aircraft batteries around the sky. These balloons were then illuminated from below by an enclosed candle, the light from which would reflect off the silver lining of the balloon itself. This ensured it was visible during this dark sky. So, I have issue with that. If you are setting these off every 6 hours, people who scan the skies, and keep in mind you had a civil air defense back then, people like you and I would scan the skies in looking for enemy targets. They would know at this point that is a meteorological balloon. Why on this night, just this night, this is the only night this ever happened. Why on this night did it happen? Reports from that fateful night indicate that while anti-aircraft batteries fired at the mysterious aircraft, only the D battery of the 203rd Coast Artillery Regiment did not. It is interesting that this very regiment had the last release of the balloon at 3 a.m. prior to the firing. They didn't fire. They released the balloon last. But again, you would be trained. Military officials, military personnel would be trained to know that's a weather balloon. That is nothing to deal with. And again, 1,440 rounds were fired on this thing. That's not including the 50-caliber rounds fired at it. None of them took it down because radar indicated that it moved south to Santa Barbara and then came back to the Los Angeles area. Weather balloons don't do that. Weather balloons follow the flow. They follow the airflow. Ufologists believe that during the Battle of Los Angeles, a large alien spaceship hovered over the city of Los Angeles and later disappeared without sustaining any damage from the shells fired at it. They claim that the American government and the military are aware of this fact, but are attempting to cover it up. That never happens. We can trust our government. Listen, we can look at Roswell. And now we can look at the Battle of Los Angeles and say, no, there's no way. I remember years, and I'm talking, well, I'm 46 now, so it would have been probably 25 years ago. I was a very, very knowledgeable ufologist in the mid-Michigan area. And I ran into someone who was alive and witnessed the Battle of Los Angeles. And I'll never forget what he said. He says, look, Tom, these air raid drills, they were normal. We would constantly hear sirens going off, and then we would constantly hear the anti-aircraft fight or anti-aircraft shells go off as part of a drill. But usually, when it got dark, they would stop because they didn't want to bother the citizens of Los Angeles and the surrounding area. He told me that the night of February 25th was different. It was not a drill. 1,400. He didn't give me the exact amount, of course, but he said numerous rounds went off, and they were firing towards something in the sky. Now, he didn't have a great perspective of it, but he said if there was something in the sky, a blimp, a balloon, anything, even an airplane, there's no way it could have survived the barrage of anti-aircraft shells being fired at it. So what is it? Again, we know it cannot be a plane. The news reports and radar has confirmed that it is that object was traveling slower than any plane could at the time. In other words, anything traveling that slow would not be able to maintain altitude and would therefore fall to the ground. So it was either a blimp or something unknown at the time. Maybe a balloon. But again, a blimp is being held up by a flammable gas. All it takes is one shell exploding in the vicinity of this craft. If it was a blimp, and that blimp is going up in flames and coming down to the ground. There is a lot of unknowns here. I personally believe this may have been an act of war from us against an extraterrestrial civilization. Now, thank God they didn't respond, but something doesn't add up. This may be the first official government, lie. Everybody looks at the government lying about Roswell as the first official lie. This, the Battle of Los Angeles, may be the government's first official lie to the population about the existence of an extraterrestrial civilization. What do you think? I want to know. Contact me, ghostseeker4@charter.net. You can contact me at Facebook on the Paranormal Patriot. Mine's at the Paranormal Patriot. Or on Twitter at the Parapatriot. Let me know what you think. Is this, in your opinion, a legitimate event? Did this occur as an extraterrestrial craft hovering over Los Angeles? Or was this just a blimp or a balloon? Let me know. Contact me, and we'll get to the bottom of this. Now, when we come back, we're going to have the Week in Review. It may be a little bit longer than normal, but I have some things I need to talk about. It's going to be one of my more political shows since the return of the Paranormal Patriot, but it needs to be said. So when we come back, you will hear the Week in Review with the Paranormal Patriot, and I'm going to ask you again, sit back, relax, open that mind. We'll be right back. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot.
Were we just two kids and nothing else to do? A little money in our pockets in a hurry to say I love you. Swear the days last forever, never thinking about the end. As long as we were together, we could make it through anything. Now I gotta see you.
Attention all fans of the paranormal and paranormal groups in the Michigan area. Michigan's Ghost Coast Paranormal Convention will be June 29th and 30th, 2018 at the Grand Haven Community Center, 421 Columbus in Grand Haven, Michigan. Do you want to show off your team? How about networking with other teams? Whether your specialty is in the field of ghosts and spirits, Bigfoot, UFOs, or even cryptozoology, the people at Michigan's Ghost Coast Paranormal Convention want you here to network with other groups and show your investigation and evidence to the public. If your group is involved in the paranormal and you want your group's voice heard, then you need to be here. Network with other Michigan teams. Show off some of your investigations and evidence, or simply come out to check out our new equipment, techniques, or just come out to listen to some of our speakers. Booth spaces are limited and first come, first serve. Check for convention updates at graspp.org or email them at debunkers@gsapp.info for more details. Pricing will be available soon. So remember, for those of you who are in the paranormal field, June 29th and 30th in Grand Haven, Michigan, Michigan's Ghost Coast Paranormal Convention.
Pick it up, speed up, her body in full swing. She giving it everything she got. Through a wink and a smile, but her bottom lip, yes, I'm down. No more holding up the walls, we getting it all. Sprinklers going off, so steadily showing off. They filling off the walls, I'm swinging back and forth, it's on. She moving, got me moving. She moving, got me moving. She moving, got me moving. Got me on it, yeah. She moving, got me moving. She moving.
Remember, everybody, if you love the music you hear on this show, go to jamendo.com, J-A-M-E-N-D-O.com. I don't care if you like rock, rap, hip-hop, R&B, pop, folk, classical, whatever you like. You can find it on jamendo.com. These are independent, unsigned artists that are not restricted to what the record companies think that you, the listener, want to hear. These are creative geniuses that are offering their music for no charge. Go to jamendo.com and listen to the new wave of music that you will be hearing on the radio.
Make haste, angry subjects, let's be the revolt. If we can't do so in public, smash our screens in the Gulf. Come out from your dungeons, feel the sun on your face. You can't hide behind your comments, you must see this place. Let's not destroy it, don't clean the pace. Slow down, I'm thinking, infect the race. All the hated fetters, don't leave a trace. Children will love, if we give them the grace. The light can win, consume our face. Complacent our pleasure and we can't be late. I hasten all your clever and you move to replace all emotions that are stagnant so we can all embrace.
Princess thoughts,
you are now listening to The Week in Review with the Paranormal Patriot. We have an invasion on our way. Not an extraterrestrial alien invasion, but an illegal alien invasion. The organization behind the 1,000-person-strong caravan of Central Americans surging towards the United States southern border accused President Trump on Monday of bullying immigrants and threatening mass violence. President Trump responded on a tweet, "The big caravan of people from Honduras now coming across Mexico and heading to our weak laws border had better be stopped before it gets here. Cash cow NAFTA is in play, as is foreign aid to Honduras and the countries that allow this to happen. Congress must act now." Now, apparently there is an organization who I can't find the name of. If one of my listeners knows the name of this organization that is allowing these 1,000 plus immigrants to come here, please let me know. I can't find the name of it. But BuzzFeed, yes, that BuzzFeed that was promoting a false Russian dossier, they have gone out and they are following this convoy. BuzzFeed reports that officials in Mexico have not attempted to stop the migrants. Mexico's National Institute of Information told BuzzFeed Monday that it plans to disband the caravan by Monday. But those helping the immigrant group are skeptical of the rhetoric. And I agree with them. They're still, to this day, on their way. Mexico has no incentive to stop this caravan because there are now Mexicans in this caravan. And when these people come to America, what do? They come to America illegally and then send money back to Mexico, therefore propping up their economy. So why would Mexico want to stop this? No, I wouldn't. Now, breaking news in response. President Donald Trump is now deploying National Guard troops to our border. Thank God. This is long overdue. I'm going to pose the question. This will be this week's poll question. Do you think, because this organization, which I have no idea what the name is, this organization has said it is our obligation. The United States of America has an obligation to take these people in regardless of their status. They have an obligation to take these people in and give them the life they deserve. Do you think that that is the case? Do you think the United States of America has the obligation of taking in every third world country resident and providing for them? Now, I'm a little biased on this, but keep in mind, how do we provide for them? By giving them food stamps, by giving them free education, by giving them free housing, by giving them free health care, by giving them free Obama phones. Everything is free to a point. Who do you think pays for this? Exactly. It's you and I, the taxpayer, the hardworking citizen of this country, is now paying for this convoy of illegal immigrants to come into this country unimpeded and take up residence and therefore drain our economy. Me personally, I think now is the time and now is the right time to put the military on the border. The liberals think, oh my God, you're going to put the military on the border. There's going to be people killed left and right. If you are entering this country illegally, in my opinion, all bets are off. You are breaking the law. We will try to detain you. But if you resist or you keep running, I'm sorry. All bets are off. You're breaking the law. I've said it before. I'll say it again. My grandmother on both sides, my grandfather on both sides came to this country legally. And what I mean by that is they filed their paperwork. They went through the proper channels. The big key is they learned the language. They didn't take their culture and try and shove it down our throats. They adapted to the American culture because that's what they wanted to do. America, as troubled as we are, is still the greatest country on earth. Why do you think so many people want to come here? Because we have the best opportunities. We are the greatest country on this planet to this day. But yet the Democrats want to say, bring your culture in. Change who we are. You know what I say? I say, we're America. We are Americans. You adapt to us. My grandparents had to do that, and they prospered. Both sides of my family prospered, owned businesses, had good jobs. Did not milk off of the taxpayer. But now, it seems that that's the way to do things. Come in illegally, milk off the taxpayer, get your free health care, free schooling, free food stamps. Let every citizen, law-abiding citizen who's doing the right thing, working hard for their money, let them pay for it. President Donald Trump, thank you for stopping this influx of illegal, and I want to emphasize illegal, against the law, immigrants from coming into this country. All right, this next story I don't want to spend a lot of time on, but we need to hear it. It has come to my attention that two elementary school students kneeled on the field during the pregame national anthem ceremony at a Seattle Mariners baseball game. A video posted on Twitter by a fan at the game, Luis Pena, showed the two girls kneeling. And they kneeled across from the military honor guard, presenting two American flags as they performed the Star Spangled Banner Saturday with the student choir from Seattle's Mount View Elementary School. This infuriates me on so many levels. First off, the school, the elementary school, in a statement said they observe and respect the students' rights to do so. I'll give them the right to do so. They have the right to kneel at the Star Spangled Banner. My issue is, who in God's name is teaching these students? Who is raising these children, because they're raising them to hate this country? There is no reason an elementary school student should have any voice, any opinion on the Star Spangled Banner. Somewhere, either their parents or their teachers or the media, which I'm going to go with the media, are telling them it's okay to kneel if you don't believe in America. We need to take back this country. We need to take this country back from the left-wing media that says it's okay to disrespect this country, that says it's okay to not stand and show respect for the flag and those who fought for this flag to give them the right to kneel at the Star Spangled Banner. My youngest is in third grade. I couldn't imagine him kneeling at the Star Spangled Banner. He wouldn't even know what he was kneeling for. Unless it was drilled into his head. Now, is it the parents? Is it the school system? Or is it the media? Somebody is culpable for transforming these impressionable young children's views of this country. Not only am I going to wear my tinfoil hat on this segment, I'm going to put my fearmonger hat on. Because there is a nightmare bacteria with the power to resist most antibiotics, and it is popping up across the United States. 11% of the people screened for these superbugs carried the superbug, even though they had no symptoms. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention study found several dangerous pathogens hiding in plain sight that caused infections that are difficult or impossible to treat. Now, this is according to CDC's Dr. Ann Schuchat. She said that while they are appearing all over the place, an aggressive approach can snuff them out. However, antibiotic-resistant germs kill more than 23,000 Americans a year. Now, these germs, they evolve quickly. They develop mutations that let them evade the effects of antibiotics. If they are not stopped fast, they spread. Worse, the antibiotic-resistance DNA can be carried in little cassettes of genetic material called plasmids that bacteria can slip in their entirety to one another into other species of bacteria. Now, this has already happened several times in the U.S., and when one superbug gives new powers to a different superbug, the results can be an infection that is impossible to treat. The CDC said in a statement, once antibiotic resistance spreads, it's harder to control. It's like a wildfire. Now, the World Health Organization has labeled antibiotic resistance a fundamental threat to all of humanity. The CDC has tried out a new system aimed at quickly identifying these superbugs. They've helped staff up state health departments and labs to quickly test samples so that hospital clinics and other facilities can rapidly isolate patients infected with them. Now, they told NBC News we were able to put 500-ish additional staff across the country to help with this. However, the results were kind of sobering. 1 in 4 of the samples sent in carried superbug genes. When the facilities involved looked further, they found 11% of the seemingly unaffected people screened carried such germs without having any symptoms. According to the CDC, this means the germs could have spread undetected in that particular healthcare facility. Now, it has been commonly known that the inappropriate overuse of antibiotics is and has been a major factor in the ability of these germs to mutate and become a supervirus. The problem is healthy people will carry these bugs and they'll do it without symptoms. They can now spread them to susceptible people who become almost like a human mosquito, therefore spreading the germs. Healthy people can unknowingly transmit the germs to a cancer patient, someone getting an organ transplant, or a vulnerable newborn or a frail elderly person. That's when an infection can take hold and kill. While the CDC is highlighting the need, once you identify people carrying these bugs, to screen them and also their contacts to make sure they haven't passed these bugs, is almost an impossible situation because you don't know who has this bug. The CDC tested for two of the best-known superbug germs. We'll just call them their acronyms, CRE and CRPA. They compared the new strategy to a more limited approach aimed at fighting another type of bacteria that resist antibiotics called extended spectrum beta lactamases, ESBLSs. The more aggressive approach worked better. Really? You're telling me a more aggressive approach worked better than a limited approach? I would have never guessed that. We have seen that the aggressive strategy is needed and it works well, according to the CDC. So I could go on what the CDC plans on doing. And it's all moot. It doesn't make a hill of beans. It doesn't make a difference. the fact remains that there are now numerous cases of a superbug that is resistant to antibiotics out there. People don't know that they have this bug because it affects some people and it doesn't affect other people. So if you are one of the unfortunate people to get this, you have no recourse. There's nothing they can do to fix you. That's scary. Now, if you're a longtime listener to the Paranormal Patriot, you know that during the Ebola scare a couple years ago, I was called a fearmonger. Now, this may be coming to fruition. We may have a bug that is killing people, 23,000 people a year, and that's going to go up, that we can't treat. You might want to stay away from the public. That's just my thought. Alrighty, that'll be the end of the show this week. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the show. This week's question, the poll question is, does the United States have an obligation to take in anyone that wants to come across the border? Now rework that as needed, but that'll be the generalized question. I will again introduce the question, should Andrew keep the name? The Cosmic Dreamer. Share it. Let me know what you think. I'm curious. Please, let me know. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Paranormal Patriot. We will be back next week with another interesting show. Please continue to share the show. Please continue to let me know what you think of the show. Let me know what subjects you want to hear about. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot.
Racking and jacking my mind up. Can I be telling the time? I don't care, no. Send 30 messages drunk.